He is one of South Africa's top labor lawyers. He is a politician and member of parliament. And now you can access Michael Bagrum as he talks law and life on High FM. Join Michael Bagrum at 6 p.m. for Bagrum on Law and Life, 101.9 High FM, 101.9 megahertz of life and law.
Hi, welcome this evening, every Tuesday evening between 10 past 6 and 7 o'clock. Thank you for joining us. We've had some wonderful guests over the past few months. We've got a wonderful guest now. He's actually already joined us. If you need to send me a WhatsApp, please do so, 061-895-1019. If you want to send me an email, please, Bags, B-A-G-S, at highfm, one word, lowercase, .com, highfm.com. And any ideas that you have, I'd like to hear about it. Throw me a brickbat if you're unhappy with something I've said or done. Any comments are always welcome. I've got a very thick skin, I don't mind. But remember, every Tuesday evening between 6 and 7, and we have a bit of fun. Like I always do, every Tuesday evening, I look at a book that I've been reading over the past few days. I've got back to a book that I started many months ago, and somehow I got bogged down, and maybe I'm not intelligent enough, but maybe I didn't understand it fully. But it's Marcus Aurelius, The Meditations. It wasn't actually written to be a book. He, in fact, wrote the thoughts. Marcus Aurelius wrote, he was a Roman emperor, if anyone doesn't know, but also a philosopher. But he never, ever intended to publish the works. He was doing it for his own self-knowledge, his own self-esteem. But he had written down numerous notes, by the way, all in Greek, not in Roman at the time, not in Latin. But it makes for a very interesting reading. Of course, because it's heavy going, I read a few pages at a time. But I enjoy it. I'm by no stretch of the imagination a fan in what he's written down and suggested. I'm not a Stoic. Anyone who knows me, I'm not a Stoic, and I like to enjoy myself, but it is very interesting reading. So worthwhile if you want to go back in history and have a look at some of the thoughts of Emperor Marcus Aurelius. Very interesting stuff. Now, to get on to the meat of what we're discussing this evening, and I have this wonderful guest, been a surprise guest, I haven't let you know, but before I introduce him, we're going to have a quick ad break for 1 minute.
High FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Thank you. You're with Michael Bagrum and our guest who I was just about to introduce, Jacques Weber. Jacques Weber, I'm going to go through some of his history. I'm not going to take you through it too carefully because he's going to introduce himself and tell us what his interests are, tell us about a little bit about the man himself, and to tell us a little bit about his history. But Jacques calls himself a community advocate, a property specialist, a business leader. He is, in fact, a respected Cape Town-based professional known for his dedication to public service. And that's what I'm going to be talking about tonight mostly, is his dedication to public service. He, in fact, runs a website. I don't know what he calls it, but he runs an information platform. I keep getting messages from people who have been on Jacques Weber's platform telling me what's actually happening in Cape Town. Now, I live in Cape Town. I'm an MP in Cape Town. I am the head, the constituency head of town, Atlantic Seaboard, all the way across to Hout Bay. And I should know what's going on, but I rely a lot on Jacques, and I'll talk a little bit about that this evening. He was the ward councillor for the city of Cape Town, mostly on the Atlantic Seaboard. And he became an extremely well-known figure on the Atlantic Seaboard. Everyone knows Jacques, and you know, I don't know if people remember the program, the TV program, Better Call Saul. Well, it became known for everyone, Better Call Jacques, if anything was happening, from a drowning on the Atlantic Seaboard to a mugging. to exciting things, to an unfortunate Hamas rally, which takes place often on Saturdays in the Atlantic seaboard. Jacques will tell you exactly where to go, what to do, how to behave. Just about everything. I don't know where he gets the energy. I'm not sure where he gets the time. But he has done some amazing things. He'll take us through some of his property portfolio work, which has been hugely successful. He's now a consultant at Double D Property Consultants. He, in fact, not only hit his target, but the paper I have in front of me says he achieved over 200 million rand in sales, and well done. What's important to me and for tonight is Jacques is a director of the Watchtower Group and Monitored. They are off-site monitoring and AI-driven security companies. And in fact, it's well known that the Atlantic seaboard owes a lot to Jacques Weaver in the way it's become a safe haven. And quite frankly, we've got some dangerous times in this country. We in Cape Town in particular, we have gang warfare, and it keeps spinning out of control into other neighborhoods. But I think, Jacques, you've been instrumental in keeping the Atlantic seaboard safe to a large degree. And I know you've been very active. I know that you the chairman of the Seapoint City Improvement District, the SID, and you sit on the board of the Lower Gardens SID, for which I'm very thankful because that's where I live, in the Lower Gardens in the Frederick area in Cape Town. Jacques, also another thing I'd like you to talk a bit about tonight is the innovative things that you've been through. I know that, for instance, we have the cameras that recognize number plates of cars, and it's been very useful. I often speak to JP Smith about this, and been extremely useful to keeping security in the Atlantic seaboard and basically Cape Town altogether. So enough from me. I want to hear you first introduce yourself. Tell us a bit about your passions, your desires, your future. Let's hear about it, and let's introduce the man.
Perfect. Thank you, Michael, and thank you for having me and to all the listeners. Very little to introduce after that CV. I think you've hit every nail on the head. I think the important part is I'm a citizen of Cape Town. I've lived here my whole life. I have been through a number of different roles, not only my professional, but as you rightfully said, in security. I was a police reservist from the age of 18. So one of my hobbies and interests is actually fighting crime. While many of my school, well, back then it was when I was in varsity, a lot of my friends were going out clubbing on a Saturday night, Sunday. I was also going clubbing, but in a different uniform. And I was going there to check on liquor licenses and others. So it has been my hobby to fight crime. My other hobby, obviously, is working out, being out with my dogs as well, and just generally being in public spaces. And that's probably what drives me to do a lot of the community work that I do with crime and fighting crime, not only because it is my business, but because I do want to have a safer area for everyone to live in. It's been a passion. I think, you know, even when I was in local politics as a ward councillor, safety was a very, very big play of my day-to-day function. Because I understood it, I was able to bring the ward up to specific levels of safety, even though that rests with the South African Police Service, and through my knowledge, able to assist with that.
Well, look, take us through the exercise. I just want to go through that exercise that the mayor has been harping on about, Mayor Jordan Hill Lewis, and I know before him as well, in that they were trying to somehow either cooperate with the South African Police Services and the municipal police, or even take over policing in Cape Town. Now, there's been a big dispute, obviously, a political dispute. I don't want to go into any of that. I want to keep politics out of this completely. But we feel, and a lot of us in Cape Town feel, that, look, there's a big, big crime problem just a few kilometers away from the city center with the gangs. And also, it doesn't seem like the police are functional. I've had experience myself where I've phoned a police station and tried to get a police van to my house. After about an hour with the local security company at my door, we never ever got to see a police van. Tell us a little about the history of that. I know you were involved heavily with it at the time, and you still probably do a lot to do with it at the moment. Tell us a bit about that debate.
Yeah, so unfortunately, we do live in a kind of janky politics out that we do have a lot of broken state departments, and the police is no different to that of any other state department. Over the years, I've just seen a degress in terms of the level of policing, and I always give people examples. When I was in the police as a reservist, and this was just around 2010, I joined in 2004, and I left in 2014 when I joined politics. But in 2010, we had, and I was around in 2010, no less than 6 to 7 patrol vehicles on a shift. So that's within the Seapoint station. Today, the exact same station is lucky if they sometimes have 1, maybe 2, but mostly 1 vehicle out on patrol. There are times that you phone the station and they tell you, sorry, we don't have a single van out, we're short of members, or the members are standing at an arrest. So there has been a systematical breakdown of the policing service, not only in Cape Town, in Johannesburg. You see it across the board often. As you know, I run a pretty large Facebook page with a few thousand followers and from across the board. And I often get people reach out to me from different areas. The most recent one was from Durban, asking me what do? They haven't investigated a case that his late mom passed away. She was run over and just not winning and getting pushed from pillar to post. And it's very similar to what you see in Cape Town, unfortunately. So that is what also kind of enabled me to become, and during my time in council, we brought in what you mentioned is the license plate recognition cameras. I was in council at that time. I spearheaded it with Heather Tager, who is a very, very, a stalwart when it comes to fighting crime as well. Heather's dedicated years of her life to fighting and crime in the Atlantic Seaboard and also Greater Cape Town area, because she serves on the CIVOC committee. And we brought the cameras, and that itself now one of the strongest fighting tools in Seapoint. Not only Seapoint, there's about 67 networks around the city of Cape Town, and that's all volunteer based. So
it's unbelievable. Unbelievable. I mean, well done to you, because you've been one of the driving force behind that.
Yeah, so definitely it's because, Mike, I believe that you can sit and moan, or you can put up your hand and say, let me do my part in order to fight crime and sort things out. I want to be able to walk out my front door and be able to walk on a safe road. And that's why I sit on 2 CID boards.
Can I put you on hold there for 1 minute again?
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Hi, you're with Michael Bagram and Jacques Weber, my guests this evening. We're talking about safety and security in Cape Town. And of course, the story was around the country. We have problems with the South African police services. We have problems with crime around the country. I think a lot of it, of course, is poverty-based, and the crime, unfortunately, has to be handled head-on. And Jacques was just explaining about the security cameras up and the recognition of various vehicles around the whole Greater Cape Town, in fact, mostly on the Atlantic Seaboard. And Jacques, you mentioned, and it hits a very fond note with me, you mentioned Heather Tager, who not only is a great friend of mine, but I also served with her, I think it was in the 90s, in a rent-a-cop exercise at the time, which she was getting a lot of trouble from the South African police services. They were really trying to disband it. A lot of that's come back. I don't know if you recall that with Heather, who had driven that exercise at the time.
So without a doubt, my relationship with Heather goes back many, many years when I was still an 18-year-old and I joined one of her Yellow Bib patrols, and over the years, grown It's grown strong and Heather indeed ran Rent-A-Cop for the South African Police Service. It was disbanded because of politics, but that has now come back in the city of Cape Town through the law enforcement auxiliary Rent-A-Cop program. So as the city improvement districts, as you rightfully said, I'm the chairman of Sea Point. I am the head of safety for Lower Gardens. And we now pay the city a fee a month, and we get one or two or three or four law enforcement officers which answer to the municipal force. So for Johannesburg, that would be seen as Metro Police. In Joburg, they're all branded as Metro. In Cape Town, we still have law enforcement, Metro and traffic, and we are able to do a lot with law enforcement. So Heather started it under the police. It's now running under the city of Cape Town. And yeah, so we still, from here, she's, when I was in the police as a reservist, she chaired the CPF. When I became the councillor, she was the CPF chair, the CID COO. And we continue to this day. If you walk down the main road once a week or once every 2 weeks, we'll be sitting in a coffee shop discussing vital issues around safety, security, and the city improvement district, which I chair.
Well, if anyone ever is in Sea Point and you're walking through the coffee shops and trying to enjoy yourself, you will see a lady walking around with a walkie-talkie. It's
correct.
Like a permanent extension of her arm and reporting dirt on the street. I mean, I've walked with her a few times, dirt on the street or a strange-looking car. Or she says, there's someone lurking. I don't like the look of that. There's an unbelievable force within herself. So thank you for bringing that to my attention again. But what a wonderful woman. And I hopefully she'll either be listening in or I'll send her a podcast of this. Jacques, I want to go back a little bit to what the Watchtower Group and Monitored, this two organizations, what do they do? And you've got AI-driven security companies. Tell us a bit about that and how can it help safety and security in a city? Call it Johannesburg.
Yeah. So those are two commercial run businesses that I am a co-director of. And what it does is it uses your CCTV cameras around your house, being the exterior of your house, e.g. the pavement, the garage, and it overlays it with an analytical-based system that looks out for certain behavioral rules that we put in. So someone lurking outside your front door, or someone sitting by your garage door, or a person coming or going from the house, then it will generate an alert, pop up in our control room. Our control room watches the alert, says, okay, no, that's the homeowner going home, dismisses it. Or like we've always had is someone jumping over the wall. That is a positive incident. Immediately dispatch the armed response. And it's we've been going for 9 years with Watchtower. I can confident and proudly say that if you ask the Sea Point Police Station, one of our strongholds are the Atlantic Seaboard. We are to date one of the providers with the highest arrest rate for criminals in the Atlantic Seaboard through our system. So often the station commander at the last meeting I was at, he said Watchtower to date is still the security company with the highest amount of arrests coming through. And that's because that's where technology is moving. A lot of buildings that have full-time security guards are turning around and saying, well, why do we need someone sitting behind a desk that more likely than not will fall asleep during the night? And again, it's very hard to stay up a whole 12-hour shift in one chair watching one screen, where you can use our system, which is one third of the price of guarding and a huge saving to body corporates. And our cameras don't sleep. So constantly being monitored. A lot of the roads across, not only we in the Atlantic Seaboard, we in Cape Town, we one of the leaders. We stretch between Cape Town, Gardens, Constantia, Epping, Atlantis. I've got across the sites. We've got properties out in Oakland, Houghton, Parkhurst, Sandton. So we are a national company. And it truly has changed the way, because that's what technology is doing. If you've got cameras and your cameras are sitting there, they're all great when they're just recording and an incident happens, you can go back and show, well, this was the guy. But we turn them into reactive and proactive. So if someone comes close to your property, property. We've also got a system that we're able to jump onto a speaker and we warn them, you are being monitored or you're being watched, move away from the property. So what happens is they see this, go, oh no, we're going to get caught, and they move on. And unfortunately, in some cases, they then look for the next house that doesn't have the system. But that has been an enormous system that has fought crime.
Yeah, what I'm going to put a curveball, and you might not be able to give me any answers on this, but you know, I speak to Glynis Breitenbach very often, and she says we are getting better and better in Cape Town in actually arresting people, in fact, in catching people on the job, as it were. They then get sort of somehow put together. I don't know what the paperwork the police have to do. And then they're handed over to prosecution, and invariably it never happens, and you find the same people back on the street again. Are you finding that as well?
Yeah, so without a doubt, obviously because of this, and I sit on a number of security groups as well on WhatsApp, because if I'm out on the road and something happens, I will respond, not only if it's from WatchOut, if it's, we've got a group that I'm one of the founders of in the Atlantic Seaboard that have us, the South African police, Metro police, law enforcement, every security company. And often they'll post a picture, we just caught this guy for robbery, and I can give you his name because it's known. And unfortunately, that's the judicial system where it becomes a recycling machine. You go in, and if you go to Polsmore, you'll be out in 2 weeks or 2 months or 2 years. So that is a very, very big issue. That's if you do get prosecuted successfully. Unfortunately, besides the fact that we are arresting, and you've got law enforcement in Cape Town doing a fantastic job, but the problem is that if the police don't investigate correctly, that docket then gets given to the MPA for a prosecution, and the chances are that you're not going to see a prosecution because evidence is not there, it's not written up in the right way, and that then gets thrown out of court. So yes, you do see a lot of reoffending criminals. I can tell you, I can walk, if you walk with me on the main road, people will say hello, and I'll say, no, I used to arrest him, he's a car breaker. And that's from my days in the police, and he's probably been arrested 16 times, and over the 20 years that I've been involved and out and now in my private business, he comes out because you can't just lock a person for car breaking for the rest of their life. It's not how the law works.
Yeah, no, I understand that fully. It's just that she's talking about almost like a roller coaster. They go in, they come out, yeah, they go in again, they come out, and she says almost weekly you're seeing the same people on the street. Not as bad in Cape Town as it is in other areas and in other provinces, and in fact in most provinces she's telling me that somehow the cops aren't properly educated. You hinted at that about the docket being properly filled in and whatever. Is there a way in which we could maybe intervene somehow here in Cape Town and train policemen who are they willing to listen? I know that Mayor Jordan Hill Lewis on many occasions is saying, I'd like to work with them. I'd like to get more involved, make it more efficient. There's no politics in that. We need people to be safe.
Yeah, so I think it's also important, and I always say upfront, Michael, is that there are some incredible police officers out there, and I sometimes also do it. I thank the South African police, but there are many, many good men and women in the service that really try their utmost. Unfortunately, they fight in a battle internally that's like when you're trying to scream in the wind. But you have members that if I know they're on duty and you're going to post on this WhatsApp group that we've got, if they're there, they're going to respond and go for it. The big thing comes down is to intergovernment working together. And unfortunately, politics plays its role there, because what you do overseas, and I watch a lot of NYPD and American, I don't watch American politics, but I watch New York City politics because of the NYPD. And you've got there the district attorneys working hand in hand with your police. So basically, if you're going after a gang, you've got a prosecutor that is part of that investigation team saying, I need this, and I need this for a successful prosecution. Find me the evidence. And that's what you need. It's almost similar to what the Scorpions were doing, because the Scorpions were part of the MPA. So they had prosecutors saying, in order to successfully achieve this prosecution, we need the following done. And that's why the Scorpions was so good.
Yeah, in fact, talking about that, and I often speak to Advocate Paul Hoffman, who has been my guest on the show, who is a big fan of the Scorpions for many years and is forever writing to the Minister of Police, although they've got their own problems at the moment. He's forever writing to them, trying to get together another Scorpions-type body, which is not answerable to the politicians, but answerable to justice only. From what I understand is we don't have a body like that. And there is a private members bill in Parliament being pushed by Glynis Breytenbach again to try and get something like the Scorpions back on the statute book. Do you know anything about that? Or have you been watching what's going on there?
Yeah, so I've read that there is a push for it, because once, remember, the Scorpions were disbanded by the previous regime and they were then brought under the South African Police Service under the Hawks, and already you basically bring in a unit into a department that is failing to begin with. So also they're very different. You had the Scorpions investigating, for instance, corruption within the police. You've now got the Hawks, but they're all part of the same department. So how do you investigate when you're in there? So I do think it is important. And as I said, when you see how it works in America, not saying that necessarily it's great, they've also gone through more police commissioners in the NYPD in the last 3 or 4 years. It's because of corruption and everything under the sun. But it's about the working together. When I travel overseas, one of the things that I often do is I go up to police officers and I speak and I say I'm from Cape Town, and just seeing the difference of level, the technology, the advancements that they've got. A lot of it coming to the city of Cape Town, dash cams, body cams, vehicle cams. The city's very much ahead of that. But if you look at the South African police, you don't even have dash cams on body cams on members. That is a compulsory thing in the NYPD, and slowly JP's bringing that out across all the forces in the city. So it's also using technology and such. I often say in America, if you're a police officer, you discharge your firearm, there's a full investigation. There's videos that show you the angles from every side. Their dockets are open. There's crime. Here, some police officers discharge their firearm every day and no one even hears of it, because all they do is they go back and that's the end of it. America, you discharge one firearm and there's an entire report that needs to happen.
You know, I was recently in Washington, D.C. And of course, I love Harley Davidson motorbikes, and I saw this wonderful Harley Davidson motorbike outside a police precinct. And I was admiring it, walking up and down and around. And obviously, the rider or the policeman who was in charge of that bike came marching up to me. He looked like a police station himself, because he had just about every single piece of equipment attached to him. I thought it was RoboCop, quite frankly. And I was feeling very guilty about having walked up and down his motorbike and admired it. And I didn't touch it. I was very careful about that. But I looked at him and he said, "What's your interest?" So I told him I was interested in his motorbike. It was a lovely Harley Davidson motorbike. Looked like a new one. And he said, "Well, get on." And I said, "With looking at you, there is no ways I'm going to get on this motorbike in case it bloody falls." And he had a good laugh. We had a chat about policing there. But he has every piece of equipment on him to charge, arrest, report. He was showing me he had 4 different radios for different precincts on him so that he could get the right people. But that must cost an absolute fortune. And I don't think our police has the wherewithal. They don't have the budget for something like that. I suppose we can just wish for it. But have you got a comment on their budgeting?
Well, if you cut the VIP policing budget, that is almost 2/3 of your police budget looking after politicians, and you put it back to the people, you'll find the money. You know, I often say that the police are not short of resources and such. And if you cut out the corruption, you will find a few hundred million that you can spend to do it. And again, the fact that we spend in more on the VIP policing budget of South Africa than what we do on the Hawks should tell you where the priorities are for this for policing. You talk about radios. As you say that, I laugh, because a couple of months, probably about 15 months ago, the Western Cape did not have a single working radio, full stop. You had police officers working via WhatsApp and control room because the entire radio network had not been upgraded in 25 years. So you could not, although the radio system became outdated that it didn't work. Only now they are rolling out 4G and 5G radios. But if you pop down to a station, stations also have only received 5 or 6 when they need 20. Well, they also don't have enough for 20 members anymore. But it's just, it's a systematical collapse of so much. You take the 10111 call center, which is our emergency call center nationally. It is so old and outdated. I take you to the Western Cape one, it is so old. In America, they get in as far as they can now even triangulate. When you phone from a cell phone, they can get your triangulation, exactly your location where you are. They're bringing out apps there that you are able to actually show operators what you're seeing, let alone in South Africa, we're still trying to just get them to answer the telephone. So that's the reality.
There's an old joke that they tell in South Africa, and I might repeat it now. It's not a rude joke, but it's a man who phones and he said, I've got my house being burgled right now. I'm watching them. They're breaking the window. They're coming in. Please send someone urgently. And they said, no, look, we're sorry. It's a Seapoint police station. We're very sorry. We don't have a car available. Nothing we can do. He, of course, then says that, don't worry. I'll see what I can do. He then phones back and says, don't worry, I've shot and killed him. And within 2 minutes, there was a car there. So let me tell you what happens, of course. At the bottom line is he hadn't shot and killed, he just wanted to get them there. So that's the answer. We must now stop and jump off the system and come back on in 1 minute.
IFM 101.9 megahertz of life.
Hi, thank you. You're back with Michael Bagram and my wonderful guest, Jacques Weber. Jacques' passion in life has been security, and Jacques has been active for many, many years. As he said, straight after he left school, he was involved and is still very involved to this day. Jacques, just your WhatsApp group, I am the recipient of some of your messages through followers of yours and people who are part of your WhatsApp group. I have a lot of friends, obviously, in the Atlantic Seaboard area, but people from all around the country say, well, Jacques said, it's almost like the gospel. Tell us about how you manage this. Who mans it? Why is it so popular? Why is it going 24/7? Tell me a bit about it.
All right. So often I walk in and people tell me, you know, I often have to hear your name in my house all the time because my wife only believes what you say. And it's how do you know? No, Jacques said it is. So it's true. So basically, Michael, how that actually started, you'll remember from my political days, I was, and it's I call it my legacy in politics. I was one of the first ward councillors to use social media. I think Helen Ziller used social media. And then when I became a ward councillor, I kind of started using my Facebook page as a way to communicate with my constituents. And now this was, I was in council in 2014. So it's somewhat 11 years ago. And no other councillor was there. And over time, I built up a massive following. I think my Facebook following is around 20-odd thousand, somewhere there. And I would be posting load shedding outages, what would be going on, a lot of what I was doing in the area. And then, as you know, I left politics in 2017. And I said, well, you know, I've built up a platform. I've got the info. In that stage, you didn't have a whole lot of applications like you had now, Eskom Supush and all the different things. And I said, you know, what does it mean if I just go onto my Facebook app and I post a quick message? Like, if it helps other people know what's going on, like, I don't have a problem doing it. And I kind of kept that up even past council. And about 2 or 3 years later, someone came to me and said, well, why don't you turn it into like a proper online news platform that you can kind of turn it into a bit of a commercial model? And I said, well, yeah, maybe. And then when the third or fourth person said it to me, I said, okay, well, here's something. So I developed an app with a very good friend of mine. It's an online website that actually pushes emails to your phone, unless you're on the Telegram premium package. And what it does is when there's a burst water pipe in the area or there's an incident and whatever it is, It gets posted onto the site. It immediately comes out on an email or telegram to you. So for instance, if there's a fire in Sea Point, it will come out fire, the location of the fire, what's dealing. Because people often hear, and to give you a good example, this weekend, there was a person that fell onto the rocks at the Moody Point Lighthouse. And I just saw on a lot of the community groups, because I'm on a fortune of road groups and building groups, and I think my phone has about 266 WhatsApp groups. I saw immediately, oh, what's going on? We're hearing sirens. And then I always laugh, because a few minutes later, once my post goes out, you'll see the post now. People start posting, no, Jacques says there's a drowning near the lighthouse. But people, it gives them a sense of knowing what's going on. Often as well, and what I also do is I try to sell a lot of incorrect truth. So you'll remember, unfortunately, about 8 or 9 days ago, a gentleman took his own life on the beachfront, sadly. But social media, what did it do? Turned it into, no, he was robbed and they shot him. And that's why we put out an alert to say it's exactly what happened. Unfortunately, he took his life on the beachfront and there was no element of crime here. So that was a very, very big part of it. I've got one of the news leads we put out is called fake news. So like the other day, I started getting phone calls hearing, oh, there's a taxi strike. Is there a taxi? It was fake news. It immediately put out there is no taxi strike. So that is where it's played a very pivotal role. That platform alone also runs in a few thousands of members. And it's purely just because I believe people should be informed. And when you're informed, you don't go with this fear mongering that happens on social media. I often refer to my mother. I call her the WhatsApp postman. If you ever want anything forwarded, you forward it to her and she will forward to it. After I keep telling her, you can't just forward, you don't know. Now she adds in, not from me, not sure if true, but she still forwards it. So, and that's what I always say. Social media is great, but it's also been the platform to pass on a lot of wrong information a lot of the time.
Well, I must just tell you, I'm one of the stalwarts, although I'm not on your platform, I receive lots of messages and everyone says it's JW, so it should be kosher, no problem over here. I have a look at it and yeah, I mean, I haven't been able to fault you. I was the person who panicked a bit when there was going to be a taxi strike. I didn't know where that came from. Before I got the message from your side, I think it was a woman by the name of Rebecca Gerber sent me your note saying that this is sheer nonsense. It's Bobomyces. She told me because Shark said it is Bobomyces. So I phoned JP back saying, don't worry, it's Bobomyces, because he didn't know about it either, about the taxi strike coming on. Yeah. And also, of course, the drowning or so-called drowning. I don't know if the man actually did drown, that fell off the rocks.
No, he was rescued.
At the light, and he was rescued. But again, that went around like wildfire. You said that there was a problem there. It went off wildfire. People were wondering whether this was crime again. You know, at the end of the day, you're actually keeping a little bit of calm and collected because, yeah, people love bad news for some reason or other. If it's good news, no one wants to hear about it, and it's not worth actually passing it on, good news. Yeah. But well, bad news, they always do.
We've set up a feature that you're actually also able to report. So people can go, we heard, and if you're a premium member, you can email us and say, I heard the following. And operator, one of the people manning the lines, will come back and say, no, that is incorrect, or we haven't heard anything of it. And yeah, there's a positive. On the weekend, there was a break in attempt to crowbar one of the buildings. One of our followers live in the building, message us to say, are you aware? And we were aware, obviously, because I was manning that platform, so I saw what happened. I was able to go back and say, but don't worry, Cape Town law enforcement arrested them on the highway going into Langen. She didn't even know, and she was so happy. So that's why I always believe that information is power. I've always said it. When you are well informed and people communicate, you can dispel any rumor or problem. And I think that's also comes from my time in council, Michael, is I like to use Facebook, and that's why I went on it first. And I still remember once Pippa Hudson on Cape Talk 567 ran the insert, and she got me on because it was a power outage. Before we started having load shedding, half of Cape Town went down. And I was at the substation with our high voltage team reporting, and she happened to got wind of it. And that's what started my Facebook page back when I was in council. And I'm delighted to see that now most political councillors have Facebook pages across the city, and because it's the best way to communicate to your audience.
What's also good, and maybe you can talk about it, but I know that when there's going to be a blockage in a road, or there's a big soccer match or a rugby match at the Cape Town Stadium, or if there's a fire on Signalled Hill or Table Mountain, the best way to get that is long before the radio pick it up is the JW Facebook page. How do you get to know about all that as well?
So I sit on, as I said to you, I've got about 260 something groups on my phone. So I generally process information. And if you know me and with
can
me,
can I stop you there? Stop you 1 minute, just for a 1 minute ad, but stay online.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Thank you. You're back with Michael Bagram every Tuesday evening between 6 and 7. We're also with a wonderful guest, Jacques Weber, taking us through his whole history of safety and security in Cape Town and beyond. And we're having some interesting discussions. And I'm talking now about his Facebook page. He says he's got something like 20,000 followers. But I know I rely on that because I do a lot of walking on Table Mountain, Lion's Head, Signal Hill. Around town, I like to walk every morning, in fact. And I get all the messages via JW Facebook page. First of all, if there's a fire, if it's place has been blocked off by the fire stations. I also get to know whether there's been any muggings and where they are and where the hotspots are. And Jacques was just telling us a bit about that. Over to you, Jacques.
Thanks. So, Michael, just to correct, it's actually an online website. So it's
www.jwi.news.
And once you sign up there, it will come to you on email. So everyone has email on their phone now, so you'll get them as they're released. So how do I know what's going on? So as I was saying, I sit on about easy 200 and something WhatsApp groups, Telegram groups. So if you're with me, generally my phone is always in my hand, and everyone will tell you yesterday I was actually at the gym and I took, I think, about 6 phone calls in the 10 minutes that I'd arrived. And one of the people came up and said, just on average, how many calls do you get a day? And I said, well, I don't know how many calls, but I can tell you messages because someone counted them the other day. And on average, I get about 198 WhatsApps a day, excluding my emails, my Telegram, and my phone. So yes, it is generally, if you see me, you're going to see my phone somewhere in my hand. They haven't designed the phone with a good enough battery for me yet. So it's about being informed. I sit on a number of groups, and also with my footprint of my security company, I hear about things also very, very quickly because we have an exceptionally large footprint in the city of Cape Town and abroad. So I hear of things when it comes to events, I get stadium calendars, which help. I also live opposite the stadium. So again, and that was the example, because often when I was in council, I would post around stadium events, because if you are here on a big event, you don't leave your house because you won't be coming back to your house in a car because of congestion. And again, and that's why I started JW. I said, if I have this information, what's it going to take me to put it out? 1.5 minutes of my time and I can hold probably 5,000 or 6,000 or 7,000 people know. And that's kind of why we do it, is it's about allowing people to be able to plan and know things. And when there's a big event out, we warn them 2 days before and we warn them on the day. And because it's important, and why be inconvenienced about it? So there's an odd occasion that sometimes I'm not the one that posts it and it's a small event. And I'm driving home, go, why am I stuck in traffic? And then I look at my phone and go, oh, yes, there was an event. Now I remember, came out 2 days ago. So I sometimes even get caught in it because I haven't checked my phone, and I'm the founder of the site.
Okay, I just wanted to end off as we're closing down. Thank you for everything that you've done tonight. But, you know, the bugbear for many of us in the Jewish community is the blocking of, on Saturdays, of these marches and cavalcades of cars coming in, supporting Hamas. And I understand that you see point for various reasons, but do they get permits every time? Is it something that is all legal and happy?
Yeah. So from a legal aspect, and I'll comment on it. So in the country, we've got obviously the right to freedom of speech. We've got the Gatherings Act, which is controlled by the South African Police Service. And in short, no, they don't get a permit because it isn't required for a cavalcade protest. It falls under the Gatherings Act. Unfortunately, there's, in my opinion, often a large amount of disruption and nuisance noise that comes with it, which is outlawed by the bylaw and not necessarily dealt with correctly by the forces. That's my opinion. By all means, everyone has a right to protest, but it should be done without disrupting everyone else. And I live very close to a main road. And when it happens for 25 minutes solid, you just hear a hooter and the noise levels. And it's disrupting, and I've had clients that have been here from overseas that I'm showing different properties, and regardless what religion or what faith, they go, oh no, I'd only be on the beach road if this is going on. It's far too noisy. So yes, unfortunately, it isn't all the for, well, according to the law, the protest falls within the Gatherings Act, but I do believe that some of the activity around it is not policed very well. And the same comes as well if you on here on a Sunday, the level of drag racing you have up and down these roads is also just too horrific. You just hear and you hear these high performance vehicles with modifications. So it is something that I do believe the city could be enforcing a little bit better.
Well, thank you. That was Jacques Weber, a friend, an activist, someone who's kept us a lot safer, in particular in Cape Town. And Jacques, I owe you a debt of gratitude for that. I've taken up almost an hour of your time tonight. I hate to get back to your telephone to see what you've missed in the last hour. You're going to be working for the next 2 hours just to try and answer everyone. But thank you, thank you, thank you. It was really fantastic. I appreciate it.
Perfect. Thanks a lot, Michael. And thank you to the listeners for having me. Cheers.
Thank you. Bye.